than it is for them to get a six-pack of beer. It's so prevalent already. And I think the mixed messages that we send to kids, that society has sent to kids for a long time, have been so damaging, because kids grow up thinking it's this horrible thing, and then all of a sudden they discover that, well, maybe their friends' parents are using it and they're okay, or maybe their friends have used it and they're okay. And all of a sudden the fear that you've created by saying just say no just crumbles, and then there's no fear or concern at all. And I think we'd be better off, just like with alcohol, educating kids about it. And, you know, what I would say to my kids is, I hope you don't touch the stuff till, you know, I hope you don't touch stuff, period. I hope you don't touch it at all. I certainly hope you don't touch it when your brain is developing and when you're young. And when you're grown up, you know, I hope you make smart choices. But like a lot of things, you know, I hope you're most importantly, you're educated and understand the risks. And so I think you got to have more honest conversations than we've had for a while.
What about our law enforcement officials? For example, you got the Connecticut Police Chiefs Association coming out opposed to the legalization.
You know, I'd love to talk with them about it and understand their concerns. We decriminalized it in Connecticut a while ago, so it's already been decriminalized. You don't get arrested, you know, for possessing marijuana for personal use. But I'd love to talk with them about it and understand their concerns. And there are also some physicians that have expressed concerns, and some states that have, you know, been asking important questions about child health and young people. So I think all those are really important. But I think the reality is we've got to recognize how widespread the use of marijuana already is. And then let's talk about what we do as a society to make sure that we're educating young people especially enough about the risks that we are, if we end up moving that direction, that we do it in a way that's properly regulated, controlled, protected, and brings in some revenue that could be used, for example, to treat some of the more problematic addictions.
So you feel, just listening to you, Mr. Mayor, we're talking to Mayor Luke Bronin, Mayor of Hartford, that really then we are, so to speak, over the hill, that there's not much we can do about it now because it's so far along. Is this what you think?
I think not too long from now, anybody who wants to is going to be able to drive up to Massachusetts and buy some. And right now, almost anywhere in their state, you can probably drive down the street and buy some. So, you know, let's just face that reality and then figure out how you manage it. You know,
would this ease some of the pressures on law enforcement if it were legalized?
It's a great question, but I don't feel, you know, that I'm equipped to answer it. I want to talk to law enforcement about it. Again, you know, they're not out there arresting folks for possessing marijuana for personal use. You know, that said, there are still groups that are, you know, criminal groups that are distributing it in a criminal way. And do you help to, just like when you ended prohibition and it was a huge blow to the mob, you know, by ending that current prohibition, do you help take that black market, which is often associated with a lot of other problems, crime and other issues, and bring it into a regulated, controlled way that actually cuts down on crime? It might well be.
Well, again, there's no question, if you believe the polls in Connecticut say that the majority of people want it. I just have always been against it. I just think it's a step forward, but you make the point that people are into it now, but I just see, I'm worried about the kids. To tell you the truth, Mr. Mayor, I am truly worried about the kids. They don't all have parents like you and the missus, and this is what I'm very concerned about.
I absolutely agree with you. And I guess my point is that regardless who their parents are, every kid is being exposed to it. It's in every high school. It's in every neighborhood. And so let's talk about it in a way that really helps young people understand the risks.
We're talking with Hartford Mayor Luke Bronin, who was in our Touchpoints Rehab interview chair. And, Mayor, we saw you on Fox News the other night, and I get calls from listeners, and I know Brad does too, about how we're always easy on the mayor when it comes to Hartford and its sanctuary city status. So
I get it all the time. All the time.
Well, you know, look, the first question is, what is a sanctuary city? I don't know the answer. I know Donald Trump doesn't know the answer. there is no federal definition of what a sanctuary city is. A lot of discussion
it's illegal to be here.
But that's not what the question about a sanctuary city. A lot of the discussion that's come out of the White House is creating this sense that sanctuary cities are somehow protecting or shielding criminals from deportation or from justice. And that's just not true. I mean, there's not a city in the country, and certainly not in Hartford, that's trying to shield violent criminals from being deported. The real question is, do we want our local law enforcement to be sort of conscripted as the enforcement arm of immigration authorities, so that they're asking victims of crime or witnesses of crime about their immigration status, or that they're detaining somebody, you know, who's at a traffic stop solely because of immigration status, or that they're holding somebody at cost to the state solely because of their immigration status? That's the real question, and to me, that's, again, it gets back to the basic sort of question about what makes a community safer and a city safer. And I've talked with our law enforcement, and the International Association of Police Chiefs came out with a similar statement saying that just does not make communities safer. So again, if you've got people who are actually violent criminals, we all want them out. And I don't think there's any city in the country that's saying otherwise. So let's start by actually defining what the problem is.
Why do we need sanctuary cities? Why do we need them?
Well, Brad, let me ask you, what do you mean by a sanctuary city?
When I think of a sanctuary city, I think of people that are in the city that are not here legally and have gone through the system. My late wife, for example, she was born and raised in Italy. They had a system to go through. She went through it and was accepted. We don't do that anymore.
Right, which is why we should be doing what should have been done 10 or 20 years ago or more, which is comprehensive immigration reform that takes a look at our process, our legal process for letting people in, but also acknowledges that we've got 11 million people who are already here. And the question is, what do you want to do? You know, do we want to dedicate the billions and billions of dollars and the amount of economic disruption it would take to take 11 million people and send them all home? Most of those 11 million people, the vast majority of those 11 million people, are living peacefully in the community. They're working hard. They're raising families. In a lot of cases, their kids are U.S. citizens. So let me throw a couple of things at you. You know, we spend more on ICE and Border Patrol as a country than we do on FBI, ATF, and DEA combined. And living in the city of Hartford, I can tell you, it would make our city a heck of a lot safer if we spent more resources on those other three, ATF, DEA, and FBI, trying to get illegal guns off the street, than if we spend more than that on ICE. It's not the right, and then to you know, double or triple or quadruple that amount of money you spend on ICE, to me, makes no sense if your goal is to make a community safer. That's one. The other thing is, think about cost. There are about 20,000 kids in Connecticut today, it's estimated, who are U.S. citizens. They were born here. They are U.S. citizens, but their parents are undocumented. Do you really want to send all of their parents home and have 20,000 kids who have no parents here? And all of a sudden, the state, in a lot of cases, is going to be responsible for putting them in foster care at enormous cost. Does that make sense?
And that's what the DCF commissioner said the other day. But, Mayor, to be fair, and this is where I have a difficult time wrapping my mind around this, how do we sanction right now illegal immigrants who are working in restaurants particularly, working in the construction industry particularly? How are we allowing, essentially, these companies to break labor laws?
That's what we're doing.
You're right, and it's what we've done as a country for decades. And so the question, I think, is when you've been doing something that's created a reality, how do you deal with that reality? You can't pretend it doesn't exist. You can't pretend that the entire, you know, that the agriculture industry in the United States doesn't depend to a huge extent on undocumented immigrants. You can't pretend that restaurants all over the country are hiring undocumented immigrants. You can't pretend that, you know, there are people doing hard work, you know, everything from day labor to cleaning homes, who are undocumented, including, by the way, you know, we still see nominees of President Trump who, you know, are pulling themselves out because they're personally hiring undocumented immigrants. we have to just face reality. And if we could turn back the clock and have a better immigration system with better border control and also a clearer path to citizenship years ago, I think any sane person would want to turn back the clock and do it. But we didn't get that done. And so the question now is, do you want to set up a deportation infrastructure that, you know, is going to make our prison system look like a tiny modest expenditure compared to what you'd have to spend to construct, you know, holding facilities and essentially prisons along the border to move 11 million people? I mean, that would be like the largest, you know, forced migration in history. And so there's a question about whether it's the right thing to do, but there's also a huge question about whether it's the right thing to do from an economic standpoint or from a public safety standpoint. And, you know, my view is, let's face the reality that we have an imperfect world, that there are 11 million people who are living in the country, and that the idea that you're going to build an infrastructure of, you know, prisons and holding cells and enforcement.
Yep. He's in the touch points rehab.
To send 11 million people somewhere else and do a lot of damage to the economy doesn't make sense. And what we're getting is sort of the playing on fear, which is why what you hear is the conversation focusing on criminals, not on the vast majority of those 11 million people. Because I think the White House and President would have a hard time making the case that that's what you ought to do.
Mr. Mayor, thank you so much for coming in. I know that you're on a tight schedule, but we were absolutely grateful that you were.
You can hang around?
I can stick around.
Good. You can.
Stick around. Yeah.
Terrific.
Wow.
All right. Great.
All right. That is good. That's terrific. Let's do a break and the news, and then we'll be back.
Rehab interview chair, and we're going to take calls in just a moment. But, Mr. Mayor, big news last week in Hartford about the three CEOs announcing they've stepped up to the plate. Talk about that.
Well, I think it's a huge announcement, and it's really significant for the city. You know, obviously, $10 million a year for 5 years helps financially. It's a piece of the puzzle. But what's really powerful about it is just that you've got three of the biggest employers in the state, and certainly three of the biggest in the city, sending a very powerful message that the strength of the city matters to their companies, matters to them, you know, that as they think about their future here, they care about the strength of our capital city. That, to me, is a really powerful statement and really important. And I think the other important thing is that, you know, what they said is that this assistance, this $10 million a year for the next 5 years from the Aetna, the Travelers, the Hartford, is conditioned on it being part of a broader sustainable solution. You know, they are calling for the same thing that I'm advocating for, which is us all coming together to build a sustainable path so we get out from the cloud of crisis and we can start promoting the good things that are happening, because there are a lot of them.
Now, you've got the fire chief who's also going to be heading Public Works for a time. Obviously, you think he can handle both jobs.
I do. He's an outstanding leader. He's done a phenomenal job as our fire chief. And this is just as an interim posting, you know, as our DPW director is leaving shortly. She's done a phenomenal job, but, you know, she's decided it's time in her life to move on. And so for that interim time while we're doing the search, he will be providing leadership on both sides.
Mayor Bronin, one of the things that has troubled all of us, and I have said it here on the radio with Dan, I think the worst thing that could happen is if we have to declare bankruptcy. This would be in every newspaper in the country for the next 2 years, and I know that one of the reasons that you have gone out to the various communities is to really take the story to them so they know how tragic it could be for us. Does this mean, does this help mean that it will not happen?
This is a part of that. It's a part of the solution. My hope is that it doesn't happen. And my hope is that what it does is help create a strong enough coalition that we all come together, the state, local government, all the stakeholders, and say, we can't let this happen. Let's make sure that we're working together to build a system that works. You know, when I went out to the towns around, it wasn't just to say, here are the terrible things about bankruptcy, but also say, look, here's how we got to this situation, and here's what we've done. You know, here are all the things that we've done at the local level. Take really aggressive and direct action to get our house in order. We've made some incredibly deep and extensive cuts in city government to bring the costs down to the point that we're running very, very lean. We've achieved some very significant labor agreements. You know, our agreement with firefighters, you'd be hard-pressed to find a labor agreement anywhere in the state in the last 30 years that did more than that. I mean, dramatic changes, dramatic increases in employee contributions to pension, long-term changes in health care, big changes in near-term health care, changes to pay scale, a lot of really significant things, and I give them a huge amount of credit for being part of that solution. So what we're trying to do is get everybody to be part of that solution. You know, our unions like our Firefighters Association, which have stepped up, you know, making those tough decisions and not being afraid to touch third rails in city government, engaging the corporate community and getting them to step up as they did in this really huge way, and working with the state to try to develop a plan that is sustainable over the long term. Because, you know, we've talked about this before. Yes, the city's made mistakes in the past, but the root of this problem, which we've all got to get our arms around, is that you got a city that has more than half of its property non-taxable. More than half of the property in the city is non-taxable. And the reason for that is because we're hosting things that serve the entire state of the region, whether it's state government, whether it's the recycling and trash to energy facility. You know, it burns the trash for 70 towns across the state, but it's located in Hartford and it doesn't pay taxes. Whether it's the MDC that treats the region sewage in Hartford, doesn't pay taxes, and whether it's the hospitals, universities, et cetera, et cetera. So the city plays an enormously important role, and we've got to recognize that that is the root of the problem, which is why we've got to build a system of the statewide. So as I've been going around to those towns, it's really to say, look, here's how we got here. Here's the enormous amount that we've done, and here's why ultimately this is going to take a broader effort. And that's why I think the insurance companies stepping up in such a big and generous way, but saying this is conditioned on us as a state getting a sustainable solution in place, is such a powerful thing.
Okay. 888-574-2723 is our telephone number. If you have a question for the mayor, let's go to the phones. Mark in West Hartford. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Dan, after my question, you have to remind him why he gets subsidized by the state as much as he does for all that non-taxable property.
You just
hey,
did.
Luke, I tried to hang in there.
He just
you.
Did.
Listen, Luke, you, and this is what I find out with a lot of politicians, there's a disconnect between the working people and then the higher up. So you mentioned before law enforcement doesn't want to get involved on a local level trying to document undocumented illegals that are committing crimes in the cities. Now,
No, that's not what I said, Mark. What I said was they don't want to spend time going after undocumented immigrants who are not committing crimes in the city. That's
okay,
what I said.
Hey, Luke, here's the thing is my nephew's a cop. I know it's all my friends. I just retired as a firefighter. My friends that have 20-plus years in the department in Hartford and the police department, they're disgusted at the fact that when they arrest somebody, they're not allowed to ask them their citizen status. There is no plug-in on their arrest report. It pains them. They know what's going on. And you're saying that, you know, they don't want to do the federal government's job. They want to. You need to, you know, talking to these guys with bugles and brass, you know, your fire chief's never been in a structure fire. I'm not knocking. The guy is a great leader. And he's a good administrator.
Well, isn't that the important thing, if you're a great leader and a great administrator?
Let the mayor answer the question.
Look, you know, I've actually talked to a lot of cops who feel differently. You know, again, the important thing is saying we're not talking about giving protection to or shielding people who are committing crimes. If someone is arrested or convicted of a crime, they're convicted of a crime, newsflash, Mark, ICE sees that, and they can come get that person. But that's not what the question is. The question is, do you want the police force going after people who are not committing crimes? Do you want them asking the victims of crimes or the witnesses of crimes about their immigration status? Do you want those people feeling so uncomfortable and scared that they're not going to share information with the cops? That's the question. And that's why it's so important. The debate centered around the name Sanctuary City is so misleading because nobody knows what it is. So let's talk about what it actually is. Or forget Sanctuary City. Let's talk about what we actually do. What we do is we try to bring people who are committing crimes to justice. And if they are violent criminals who are undocumented, we want them out. The question is, do we also want our law enforcement, our police force, which is too small as it is and has a whole lot to do to keep this community safe, do we want them instead spending their time trying to round up, you know, families, parents of U.S. citizens, people who are just working hard and not doing any damage in the city? Do we want our law enforcement spending their time, their resources, trying to round those people up and send them out. And I just think, you know, it doesn't make sense. It's just not common sense.
You know, Mayor, one of the things I hear from other people in law enforcement, however, is when they take the oath of office to serve in law enforcement, it's also to uphold federal law in addition to state law, and they believe that they're being denied the chance to uphold federal law.
Well, I'm glad you raised that, Dan. Nothing that the city of Hartford does is in any way inconsistent with federal law. There are no federal law requirements that we do those things I was just talking about. There's nothing in federal law. We obviously can't stop and don't have legal authority to stop and wouldn't stop. ICE, if they are doing what they are directed to do, they can do that. There's no legal authority to stop it. But there's no legal requirement that our local law enforcement become the enforcers of immigration law, irrespective of whether the person is committing the crime. Again, if they're committing a crime, that's an issue for local law enforcement to get involved in. And no one should be shielded. If they're a violent criminal, they shouldn't be shielded, protected, arbored, anything else. But that's not the question. The question is, should our law enforcement be going up to round people up just because of their immigration status, even if they're living peacefully and working hard? And there's no violation of federal law to do that. In fact, there are courts around this country that have found cities in violation of the Constitution when they do that. What happens is, if ICE issues a detainer for somebody and there's no warrant, there's no judicial warrant, and if a city holds the person simply because of that, there have been a number of cities that actually have been found in violation of the Constitution for doing that. So the law is actually arguably on the other side.
Okay, how do we get more people who are Hartford residents to become Hartford cops?
Thank you for asking that. It's a great question. We're working hard to do it. Right now, we just brought on a class a couple weeks ago, which included three cadets who came through the cadet program, a pipeline program designed to get residents into the police force through the cadet program. But right now, we're going out with a recruitment effort that is focused particularly on Hartford residents. Now, we're going to be recruiting on an ongoing basis, so I don't want people to think that we're only focused on Hartford residents, but we really do want to get more Hartford residents onto the force because it strengthens the community and strengthens the force. You know, when we talk about community policing and you want officers who've got relationships in the city, who have that trust, who know the community, it's obviously easier to do that if you've got somebody who already calls the city home. So we're working hard to do that. There's a recruitment that's open right now until the 15th. So if you know anybody who's interested in a career in law enforcement, you know anybody in the city of Hartford, a young person, please urge them to apply. You can go right to the city website, and there's a link right on the front page. But we're going to be recruiting on an ongoing basis, and one of the things I'm determined to do is rebuild our police force's numbers because over the past years, there was very little done to do that.
How many more police officers do you really need?
Well, you know, it's a good question, and I don't know that anyone knows the answer. There are some who say we should have 500 officers, as the city, you know, once did. There was an independent study that said we should have 480. You know, some people say we should have 450. What's clear to me is that you should have more than we have right now. And so we're going to be working on an ongoing basis to recruit and to rebuild, because you have a lot of officers who are reaching retirement age. And again, for many years, the city didn't do the kind of recruitment on an ongoing basis that needed to be done.
We're out of time, Brett.
That's it. Mr. Mayor, thank you for coming in.
Great to be with you always, and have a great day.